Pakistan.
Welcome to Eye in the Sky, the UFO synopsis, here on the Radio Paranormal Network. I did it again. Why do I want to do that? Keep getting them switched. Paranormal Radio Network. Sorry about that. I'm your host, Dee Andrew, and tonight my guest is Stephen Bassett. Stephen Bassett is a political activist, lobbyist, commentator, and columnist. He is the founder of the Paradigm Research Group, the executive director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomenon Political Action Committee, or EXPAC, and the author of the Paradigm Clock website. He is also one of the leading advocates in the nation for ending the 60-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race and the planet Earth. He also has a video question for candidates on intentions towards a proper presidential briefing and congressional hearings regarding the UFO ET phenomenon, and is one of 45 under consideration for the ABC News GOP presidential debate moderated by George Stephanopoulos. The question, while submitted early, was posted only recently and has received a limited number of viewings. The prospect for this question being used in the GOP debate will be enhanced if the number of viewers increases and the ratings for the question increases. Any additional viewing and increased ratings by list members could help get this question in. Colon, /, ugbz.abcnews.go.com/player.astx?ID=562141. Boy, that's a mouthful. Also, there's a link for it on the Eye to the Sky website and also on the Arizona ICAR website that can take you right to this video question. And you can see for yourself how it goes, and we'll see how that goes in the morning, won't we there, Stephen?
Yes. This is part of the new hyperspace, cyberspace reality that we're in. This was predicted years ago, that the future of politics is, in fact, the Internet. I expect within not too many years, voting is going to be done by net. We have special voting accounts, election accounts, with passwords and security, and people will be able to vote directly from their house. A lot of people are worried about that. I understand that, but this is where it's going. Plus, you have the blogosphere, and you have YouTube and the video reality that's coming on. And they've already embraced this with the YouTube debates. One has already been held. There's another one coming up September 17th. This question is also entered into that debate, the GOP debate September 17th on CNN. This is ABC News tomorrow morning. And they put together a similar approach, but it was through a new video site, which is backed by ABC, called ICAUGHT, I-C-A-U-G-H-T. And it's new, no, people don't know about it, so as a result, the number of questions that got submitted to ABC is not many. There's only 45 video questions in play. And the expat question regarding presidential briefings on the ET issue, as well as congressional hearings on the ET issue, has got a much better chance to make it into the debate tomorrow. This, to my knowledge, on any of the formal debates that have been held for presidential candidates in the modern era, not a single question has ever been asked about the ET UFO issue, even though it's a worldwide phenomena. There's witnesses coming out by the scores. There's been countless sightings, government documents, and numerous polls by Reuters, CNN, and Time, and so forth, in which the American people state quite clearly that they think the UFO thing is real, that there's an ET explanation, and that they overwhelmingly state that they believe the government's lying about this. Any other issue had those kind of numbers, it would be a big news story. But this one remains contained by the truth embargo, by the ghettoization of the issue by the government. And so people just are able to campaign for the most important position in the land and not have to say anything about it, which is obscene. So, will it get asked? Find out tomorrow. Tune into This Week with George Stephanopoulos on ABC. It's a Sunday morning show. It'll go for 90 minutes.
I'll be looking forward to that. And it's an interesting term. I've never heard it quite put, ghettoization of the subject.
Yes. It's a concept that I'm trying to get out there. I wrote an article recently called The ET Ticket, and that's part of the campaign effort to get this issue out there. And then an article I wrote just before that called UFO RIP, referring to the end of the UFO era, gets into this issue of the intellectual ghettoization of ufology. And I've talked about it publicly. And in a few words, what the government did, starting in the early 50s, is something that governments have done many times over the past 10,000 years. And that is, if there's something they don't want to deal with, an idea, a group of people, or anything within the society, what they do is you ghettoize it. And by doing that, you're able to isolate that which you don't want to deal with from the rest of society, so it gets diminished, and in some cases destroyed. It's a very effective and very nasty Machiavellian tool, but it's used frequently. And there's been many instances of this. I think people are aware of some of the ghettoization that's gone on in the 20th century. But it's not just people. That you can ghettoize an idea. And so what they did was they decided we'll pick something, we'll focus on some aspect of this, and we'll ridicule it, and then we'll just attach and add more elements of the issue to this ridicule until we can isolate it. So people will, the mainstream people, university scientists, academics, the press, funders, foundations, grant monies, will not be available to it. They put a wall around it, which we now refer to as the ridicule curtain. And it was very effective. Anybody that touched the issue was tossed into this ghetto. And once in there, it becomes more difficult to function or to deal with the rest of society. And so they literally ghettoized the issue, the concept of extraterrestrials and their presence here, their engagement of the human race. And they did it by many means, planting stories and tabloids, undermining the issue by claiming it's silly, denying certain facts about it, withholding information, classifying it, and it was a very effective tool. And they've had virtually been at it since the early 50s. We're talking 55 years, and as a result, the political candidates won't touch it. The political press avoids it. The academics will not teach it. There's not a single course in the entire university system of the country other than continuing education, and one course that occasionally is taught at Temple University by David Jacobs on this subject. No foundations, except for a couple of small foundations in the last 50 years, have put any money into the research, and on and on and on. One of the roles of PRG and XPAC is to help break through that ridicule curtain and get this issue out where it's supposed to be. And a good start would be the presidential debates, and that's why this question has been put together and why we're working so hard to get it asked by one of the moderators.
One of the main questions I keep getting asked about exopolitics is, what is exopolitics? So I want to hear your definition of the term.
Well, exopolitics emerges as a term in this context. It had been used very, very lightly in some other context in politics prior to 2000. Virtually not known. And it's not in the dictionary. It's not in the mainstream dictionary. But in 2000, it emerged in the work of Alfred Weber, wrote a book called Exopolitics. And I recognized immediately that this term was going to be the term that under which we were going to deal with this issue in the future, which is why I wrote that article, UFO RIP. The UFO era is finished. It was ended really in 1991. We still use the phrase and we talk about UFOs, but the fact is the concept of UFOs is ridiculous now. We know that there's ET craft there. We know there are extraterrestrials in those craft. So we need to find new terminology to deal with the issue. And exopolitics emerges in 2000. I immediately arranged to get Alfred Weber on Coast to Coast AM, and he got a lot of exposure and is now deeply involved in this issue, and other people have joined him. I put together a dictionary term and got it published, and it's still up on Wiktionary, which is the dictionary version of Wikipedia, and it's also on Webster's Open Dictionary. And the term is very clean, it's very straightforward. It's the art or science of government that is concerned with creating or influencing policy toward extraterrestrial phenomena and extraterrestrial beings. It's not just the politics of ET beings. It's the politics surrounding our engagement of the phenomena itself. And then there's some secondary definitions, exopolitical actions, practices, or policies. In other words, like, what's your exopolitics? The exopolitical opinions or sympathies of a person. And then the total complex of relations between the human race and non-human intelligent beings. That will be ultimately where exopolitics will end up, our political engagement and relations with other civilizations. And it's under this term that we will resolve the truth embargo, hold eventually a disclosure event, and it's under this term that we'll prepare for full open contact. And this will be the term that will describe our actions in the post-contact world. So that's what exopolitics is.
Makes it a heck of a lot more understandable for those of us who are political dummies, myself included. I was just wondering, Ed, what got you involved in exopolitics?
Well, I guess it's a case with. I've always been a political activist, but I just didn't realize it when I was younger. That's where I probably should have been, but for various reasons, I didn't get into it. I tried to do other things. I studied science, and I thought maybe I'd work for NASA and so forth. But deep down, I was a political activist. I should have gotten involved in the anti-war movement in the 70s, and I dabbled, but I didn't get into it. So you might say that I was going against my own nature, and as a result, was not particularly happy or particularly successful. This is often the case when you're trying to do things that you're either not suited for or not interested in. And I didn't find my true calling until my 50s, or rather my late 40s. And the interest, the ET issue had always been something that I was intrigued by. It's hard not to be intrigued by it. It's been around since I was born. I was born in December of 46, so the Roswell event occurred just 7 months later. And, of course, by 46, you had the Foo Fighters that were tracked in the war, and the issue was just starting to emerge. So the ET, modern ET issue, the modern UFO issue, virtually parallels my entire life. And over the years, I would read the occasional article. I remember reading the Look magazine article on the Betty and Barney Hill abduction. But what do you do about it? It's not easy to engage it, certainly back then. So people who were older than I got involved in organizations like NICAP and eventually MUFON and so forth. But I was not really, wasn't able to get involved in that, didn't get involved in any of these groups or join any organization. So I just went about my life, but the issue was always sitting there in the back of my mind, because it was extraordinary, and I felt it was unresolved. Eventually, I came to realize, even in, as early as the 70s, that the only possible explanation for what was going on was that, in fact, it was extraterrestrials that were visiting this planet that were already here, or had already engaged us. But again, what do you do about it? So, by the time I looked at the issue again seriously, it was 1995, and not too long after John Mack at Harvard published his book Abduction, Human Encounters with Extraterrestrials, which was a pretty amazing book by a pretty amazing man. And at that point, this issue had matured substantially. And when I looked at it at that point, I realized that not only had it matured, but something was getting, it was going to happen pretty soon, that this thing was about to break open. And that meant that there was an opportunity to get involved in what would easily be the most profound event in human history. Now, that was an inviting proposition, so I plunged in January of 1996, and quickly figured out that where I could be of help, where I could be productive, was the political aspects of this, because political activists is really what I'm about. And so in no time, I gauged the politics of it and have done everything I can since to engage the political aspects of this. So that's how I came to be involved.
That's interesting. It's kind of like you. I'm like late in life getting into being going public, so to speak, I guess, with my views on the subject. You know, that's part of the whole reason why I agreed to do this show, is I feel it's a way that I can educate, you know, the public and anybody out there who's willing to listen on the subject by having people from different aspects of the subject come on and talk about it. And so I can relate on that point. I understand you did some work with the John Mack's organization.
That's how I started. I offered to come up to Cambridge and just be a volunteer, full time, and see where that would go. Primarily development. They were the Program for Extraordinary Experience Research, PEER, which was part of the Center for Psychology and Social Change, which Mack had formed years previous and had been involved in a number of projects dealing with the human condition, was underway in Cambridge, and they were trying to expand, they were trying to grow. Not easy to do, since there was plenty of resistance to Mack's work from Harvard, to Harvard's ever, well, soon to be disgraced. And I'd had experience in business development and that thing, and somewhat of a science background. So they let me come in. I spent 4 months there, and it was interesting. And I got to meet John, who, as we know, has passed away. And as a result, both the Center for Psychology and Change and Social Change and PEER are essentially in indefinite suspension, which is real tragedy, actually. No one was able to really step in and take it over. And it was a good introduction, but it wasn't a fit. I'm not a researcher, didn't want to do research, and the academic setting was not right. So, but that was my door in, and I was very fortunate to have an interest in the field at that level. And then from there I went back down to Washington and set up Paradigm Research Group. So I have a great affection for John Mack and the people there that let me in and treated me well. And it was a terrible thing when he was accidentally run over in England not too long ago. So I was very upset by that. I've written about that. But he's a great man, and one day he'll get the respect that he deserves for the courage that he demonstrated in taking this issue on. There are, in the United States right now, an unknown number of thousands of people who are in the closet in exactly the same way that less so now, much more so prior to 1980, that people who are gay, homosexuals, were in the closet. And these closeted people I'm referring to, of course, are contactees. The contactee movement, which really started to turn up in the 50s, was labeled the Space Brothers, and was a mess, to be sure.
Mm.
It been a difficult and complex history. The fact is that the experience of some of the people that tried to talk about these things in the 50s and 60s was awful. And I think any reasonable person who saw that said, I don't want to talk about this. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. There are many reasons not to talk about it, obviously. Now, how many people are closeted on this issue, we don't know. I think it's a large number. And one of the things we've been seeing in the last 10 years, last 15 years, partly due to John Mack's work, is that they're starting to come out of the closet. And exactly as in the case of the homosexuals, when they came out of the closet, they started to exert political influence, they started to address their issues and get them into the public arena. It's happening with the contactee situation. They're creating radio shows, conferences, they're writing books about their experiences, they're creating websites about their experiences, they're going and getting help, they're forming support groups, they're doing hypnosis to try to recall memories. They're literally forming, in their own midst, a whole new genre of science and human experience. It's a fabulous thing to watch. It's human empowerment, but it's not easy. And none of them have an easy road, in my opinion. There are thousands more who will be coming out soon, and that's just one more reason why the government's truth embargo, which is an antiquated and no longer functional policy, will collapse. And when it does collapse, then there will be what we refer to now as the disclosure event. And the disclosure event is the a formal acknowledgement by the government of this ET presence, indicating that in fact there's extraterrestrials here and they're engaging us. And then what happens after that, of course, is unsure. But that event will be a big deal, and will result in some serious changes in human affairs. And I believe that event is very close. I think it could happen at any time, and we all need to sort of prepare ourselves for this transition, as it were.
Kind of deja vu, I guess you could call it, that you mentioned the contactee movement of the 50s. I have been talking with Joe and other members of ICAR about why so many of the mainstream ufologists kind of, you know, go, oh, okay, when you mention contactees. But it's, personally, I think it is because of the 50s and 60s era contactee movement, because you had people like Spaceship Ruthie, you know, and George Adamski, you know, they came up with some of these wild stories that we know today through contactees of today, telling their stories that they don't even fit, so to speak.
Sure. There were many problems that were embedded in the era. People didn't know what we were dealing with. There was no precedent for it, really. Even science fiction isn't that old. The science fiction as a genre didn't emerge until the end of the 19th century and didn't really get going until the 1930s. So this is all new. And there were some people that almost certainly were in contact with ETs, just as we're seeing that now. And there were stories probably bubbling around under, you know, behind the scenes and in private And then when the saucer sightings started occurring, it was, I'm sure, stimulating some of these individuals that were having these memories. So, but it was also new, and they didn't understand what was happening to them. As a result, the stories were bizarre. Others jumped in to have some fun. I mean, again, it all seemed crazy and wild, and nobody knew what was happening, and so a lot of people were just having fun with the issue. So you had a lot of people out there that were claiming to be contactees that weren't, and they pretty much could say anything they wanted. And the whole thing was a circus. And the government had made no effort whatsoever to sort it all out or to help clarify, because the government was thrilled with that circus. They wanted it.
It helped to more of the humor aspect to it, the giggle factor.
Sure. This ridicule curtain that I'm referring to that surrounds the ghetto of ufology, it wasn't simply built by the government. The people in general helped build a good portion of it. Government didn't build the whole curtain, and that's okay. I mean, that's fine. I mean, the government didn't care who built it as long as it got built. So it was a dynamic going on between the government's policy and the confusion amongst the populace. So the whole 50s space race movement was just a mess, but understandable. And it certainly was not helpful to any serious approach to the issue on the part of researchers or anybody else. So the people in the field had to distance themselves from the Space Brothers movement. Then when more realistic and legitimate contact experiences started to be expressed in the 70s and 80s, and very much in the 90s, they still were reluctant to deal with it. But eventually they did. I mean, MUFON eventually embraced the issue, and it's made the abduction phenomena and contact phenomena a legitimate part of their work. And other groups have done the same thing. We're talking about a very, very complex mixed history starting in the late 40s all the way through now. It's a 60-year period, and it has an extraordinary story, which will be written and discussed and chronicled for the rest of our lives and well beyond that. I mean, it's 60 years from 47 to now, to the disclosure day, disclosure event, will be one of the most studied periods in the history of the human race. And hundreds, even thousands of years now, people will talk about it and read about it and try to understand what happened to the human race between 1947 and 2007, 8, 9, whenever disclosure takes place. So it's an important time and very complex, so it's not easy to get a full understanding of it and to appreciate it. But one of the things that one needs to understand is that the government's role in creating this intellectual ghetto and creating this division and ridiculing the issue and keeping it at bay is an important part of it. And it is not a favorable story. It's not a good thing. And this ghettoization process needs to stop. I mean, we need to really help to ensure that governments don't do this anymore to anything. It's not government's role. It's a venal, it's counterproductive, it's destructive, and it shouldn't happen. So let's hope that we learn a lesson from this in due course and say, look, your role is to build the bridges, defend the country, take care of business. It's not to play propaganda games. It's not to trick us, fool us, lie to us, manipulate us. Your job is to serve us and provide a functioning and safe environment for the people to live. And we will not tolerate this kind of behavior from you anymore. So there are some very larger contexts that the ET issue affects and intersects with. So it's a lot more than just, gee, are there UFOs or not, or where are these flying saucers coming from? It's really the story of a huge transition in human history, and it's about where we're going to go next and so forth. So it's a big deal, and that's why we need big terms to deal with it. Exopolitics is a term, I think, which will embrace a substantial portion of all of this as we try to understand it.
I was just sent a question from our virtual auditorium here in Paltalk, asking about a multi-pronged approach to trying to force disclosure, the ET presidential ticket, and what voters can do, and also about this petition that is out.
There are a number of petitions out there. At my main site, paradigmresearchgroup.org, at the PRG site, there's five sites there, but the main one is PRG. There's several petitions that are there. The original congressional hearing petition still exists, and it's up on my site too. But it's really kind of inactive. It takes money to drive these kinds of things, particularly petition processes. It really takes money, even with the internet, and the money is just not there. Multi-pronged political activism, definitely the way to go. It takes money. The biggest problem, the biggest operational problem in the citizen resolution of this issue has been a lack of money. That's been probably the single most successful. Well, it's one of the most successful aspects of the government truth embargo and the ghettoization of the issue, is that virtually no money has been provided. The amount of funding that has gone into this issue from third-party sources since 1947 wouldn't even build you a couple of miles of freeway. It's just unbelievable. And as a result, everyone has had to pay their own way. They've had to pay for their own research, pay for their own travel. They lose money on their projects. Just huge amounts of sacrifice has been made. There's been no funding from universities, no funding from institutions, foundations, nothing from the government, of course. A few private funders, very few, have put a bit of money in. And so it's all been pursued, self-financed by individuals who, by and large, with very few exceptions, were very modest means. Well, that's not a way to, I mean, that's a very hard road to take when you're talking about big issue political activism. I mean, if the civil rights movement had had the same amount of money to deal with that we've had, then blacks would still be, you know, drinking from separate water fountains in Mississippi. If the women's suffragette movement had the kind of funding we've had, women wouldn't have the right vote today. The British would still be in India. There'd still be apartheid in South Africa. I mean, this issue has had no money, and at any moment, any number of people, Mark Cuban, Paul Allen, you know, Bill Gates, Steven Spielberg, any number of Hollywood celebrities and tech people, any one of them could put enough money into this issue to probably bring it to resolution very quickly, but they won't do it.
Oh, well, Dan Aykroyd has been working with Michael Salas. I mean, excuse me, not Salas.
David Sirita.
Yes, thank you. Too many names to keep straight.
Well, you know, Dan is a good guy. I like Dan. Smart guy. Talented man. And to his credit, he has publicly stated some strong feelings about this issue, strong positions. Most notably in that documentary that David Sirita put together called Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs.
I have that. It's very good.
And he allowed his name to be used as a spokesperson for MUFON. But he's not. He won't go beyond that. He has not put any money into the work. And by that I mean the politics, not the research. We've already proven there's ETs here. I mean, proving that over and over again is, I don't think, constructive anymore. We need to put the pressure on the government. So, but Dan has certainly put his name behind this, and we appreciate that greatly. And we could use a few more Dan Aykroyds to do that. But most importantly, we got to have funding, and we cannot get it. It's very hard, if not impossible. Still, now I think it's getting better. I think the atmosphere and smaller fundings of $1,000, $2,000, and $3,000, $5,000 have been turning up. But serious money, $500 million, $2 million, $3 million, that's not there. And this is only the biggest issue in the world today. I mean, I think it's more important than anything else. It's more important than global warming, more important than the Iraq War, it's more important than AIDS. The acknowledgement and public acceptance and understanding that there is an ET presence, that we're not alone, is the biggest issue in the world today, and it has no funding at all. So this is a matter of priorities. What do we want? And then there's the issue of the government lying about it, or at least embargoing the truth about it, and the fact that the government's gotten somewhat addicted to that. It's made institutional lying sort of part of the governmental process. So it's not just candidates, you know, fibbing about their background or lying about what they would do if they were elected. It's now institutionalized government propaganda saying that up is down, black is white, there's WMDs in Iraq when there aren't, there's no ETs here when they are, and so forth. And that just destroys the relationship between the government and the people, damages the social contract, undermines trust in government, which is at all-time lows, and leads to dysfunctional civics. And dysfunctional civics eventually leads to bad policies, which leads to catastrophe. So there's some big issues at play here, and the citizens need to step to the plate. They need to ask their candidates about this issue and stop worrying about somebody giggling in the background. So what? Let them giggle. They need to ask the media, why aren't you covering this? They need to write letters to the editor. And put every other kind of pressure they can, get this issue part of the public arena. There are people that are trying, and they're making a little headway here, a little headway there, but overall, we're still behind the curve here. But I'm optimistic that that will change, and it will change quickly. When it changes, it'll change very, very fast, overnight. Like this question that could get asked tomorrow on ABC News by Stephanopoulos, if it's picked from the 45 that is on that website. And I think I've got links on my site to the question. You've got links on your site to the question. If you go find this week with George Stephanopoulos, you'll find links to the video questions there. They asked that question, that there'll be 9 or 10 candidates on that stage. And if one of those candidates were to give that question a proper response, it could set off a chain reaction with unknown consequences. So we are right at anything happens at any moment that would change this dramatically overnight. So one should be prepared for that to happen and then take advantage of it when it does. Make sure that the momentum continues and that we end up with the goal, and the goal is disclosure. The government's got to end this truth embargo and acknowledge the ET presence. The Catholic Church eventually acknowledged that the earth went around the sun. Bless its heart. Took a while, but those are different times. We don't have the luxury of taking a couple of hundred years to figure out the obvious. So the government needs to acknowledge ET presence, and then we need to deal with that and move on with the advancement of civilization, as it were.
Hey, we have a question for you from our virtual auditorium. Are you up for it?
Well, of course.
Certainly.
Hi.
Gossamer777, the mic is yours.
Yeah, good evening, Stephen. My name is David Andrew. I'm Dee's husband, actually, and Southwest Regional Director for ICAR. Stephen, I was just curious, you know, in something I had watched that you were in a documentary, you were talking about Rockefeller and how he was trying to influence President Clinton to get some sort of disclosure happening. I was just curious, is there anyone in that that genre of big business mogul, more current people, say like maybe Bill Gates or Richard Branson from Virgin, anybody like that you know of that's got big bucks and some clout that's actually raising their voice and showing interest in this topic? Thank you.
Person. Rockefeller put a little bit of money into this, 5,000 here, 10,000 here, 50,000 there, to his credit, but he was a billionaire. He could have put 10, 15, 20 million into this. And we probably have disclosure by now. But still, he put his money where his mouth is. He helped John Mack. He helped others. And, of course, he made an effort to possibly convince President Clinton to bring the records out and end the cover-up, basically. Which is an issue that's still in play, believe me. And you'll be hearing plenty more about that. In fact, my conference, X Conference, which is coming up September 14th through 16th in Gaithersbury outside of Washington, we're going to be talking about that, and we certainly invite people from all over the country to come join us. The website is x-conference.com. Registrations are underway right now. Bob Bigelow out of Las Vegas, who is worth a couple hundred million, is interested in the subject. He's also interested in space. So he put some money into it, but it was primarily, he didn't put it into other people. He created his own thing called the National Institute for Discovery Science, NIDS. And they had a board of directors with some people we would know, did some investigations and what have you, but it was kind of an insular thing. It lasted for a while, and then they finally wrapped it up. It's in suspension now. So he put some money into it. Joe Firmage, who at one time was worth about $100 million, but he lost almost all of it in the dot-com crash, put a few thousands here and there into various groups, some researchers, again, small change. And that's about it. The big money, the people that have huge money now are very hard to get to. It's a sophisticated time we live in, and these individuals have assistants and screeners and security and everything else. So you just don't get to Richard Branson or Steven Spielberg or Paul Allen. I mean, if you don't have a very close connection there, you're getting nowhere. So, and they also play their cards fairly close to their chest. They're careful about what they say. So I'm not aware of any of these kinds of individuals that are prepared to move on this issue. There are a number of candidates that would seemingly be perfect for this if they were to be bold enough to do it, which they need to seriously think about, because they would make history. I mean, they'd go down in history. 1,000 years now, people be talking about. People with large money who are iconoclastic or maverick in their thinking, we know of them. Richard Branson is one of those people. I mean, he's clearly a change maker and a guy who is innovative and on the edge, and a perfect candidate to address this issue and put the money behind the political resolution of it, but he's chosen not to. Ted Turner is an infamous contrarian, or maverick, rather, who has tweaked the government many times and extremely critical of government policy. He put $1 billion in the UN. He's put nothing into this issue and hasn't. I don't think he ever will. Mark Cuban is a billionaire who is young and dynamic and not afraid of anything and does pretty much whatever he wants to do. He could easily put the money in here to do this. He's chosen not to. Steven Spielberg has made hundreds of millions of dollars from the extraterrestrial issue through films, entertainment projects. He's put nothing into it. He would be a perfect candidate. Paul Allen is very much interested in space, but he bought the government's propaganda and ended up putting his money into SETI, which is essentially a bogus scientific front operation for the truth embargo. He put $9 million into it. If Paul were to see the light and put money into the political disclosure process, we could have disclosure in no time. But he's not done it. So, I mean, there are others we could list, but you're getting the picture here. The government has been very successful in creating a false reality, threatening people at times, and building this ghetto. And nobody wants to be in this ghetto that isn't there. And so those that have that kind of money are afraid that if they put money behind this issue in a significant way, they'll be ghettoized along with the rest of us. And so they choose not to, which, of course, helps keep the ghetto going. It's nasty business, this process. And I hope it never happens again. But the government will continue to try to do this, because that's what they do. Separate, divide, conquer, humiliate, isolate, and contain and control, so that they can govern with minimum interference and hassles. In other words, don't ask us hard questions. Just elect us, vote us into office. Don't ask us hard questions. Give us your money. Let us do what we please. And be happy with whatever we give you, even if it's inferior. This is the default position for governance. And the American people had better step up and demand more, or they're going to lose in the end, possibly spectacularly so. That's my answer regarding the money. But, you know, believe me, if I could get a meeting with Spielberg or Allen or any of these people, I'd take it in a heartbeat. And if they were to show some interest, I'd meet in a second. But getting to, just even getting an invitation to spend 10 minutes with them, I mean, it's almost impossible.
I've just been informed on the ABC News website for your video question. It says ICOT is temporarily down for some server upgrades. We will be back soon. So that's why people in our virtual auditorium cannot get through to that link.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me that this is all brand new stuff that they're putting together as ABC's trying to jump into the video revolution. Let me just confirm this. I'm at the site now, and I'm going to click it. Yeah, okay. So they're down, and I'm sure that that's legit. It's nothing funny going on there, and they'll be up shortly.
I was just letting everybody know that that's why they can't get it to open.
Yeah,
it took quite a while for it to open for me to get that page to come up and saying their servers were down.
They're doing this through a new entity called ICOT, which is an ABC-backed attempt to create a YouTube environment. And I'm sure there's plenty of glitches and stuff that is going on, so hopefully they'll get that together.
I think you were mentioning the X conference coming up here in September. Care to give us a hint on who all will be your speakers?
Oh, yeah. No, the speaker lineup is set. It's at the website, x-conference.com. And we got a good, strong lineup. I think our April is going to have an even stronger lineup. I think the April event, which is the 2008 conferences, could be extraordinary. But we have Gilda Bourdais coming in from France. We'll be talking about French issues, UN stuff. We've got Donald Smith and Thomas Carey talking about their new book, Witness to Roswell. Richard Dolan will be talking about his new book, UFOs in the National Security State, Volume 2. Stephen Greer will be presenting. Paula Harris from Italy, Antonio Hanaez from Chile. Paul Kimball's coming down with a premiere of his new documentary, Best Evidence, Top 10 UFO Sightings. Jaime Musson coming in from Mexico. Nick Pope coming in from the UK. Robert Salas, Captain Robert Salas, will be talking about one of the most important sightings and events in this subject, which is, of course, the Malmstrom SAC Air Force Base event. Michael Sala will be coming in from Hawaii. Danny Sheehan will be presenting. Rob Simone, who's an emerging person in this field with many, many talents, is going to be there. And of course, the founder of Exopolitics, Alfred Weber, will be there. And then we'll have some panelists as well, some documentaries, a banquet, cocktail party. So it's a significant conference, and it's held in near Washington, and the political press are invited. The congressional staffers are invited, and all the presidential candidates are invited. And we have a keynote speaker that's in negotiation with right now. So significant conference, September 14 through 16. We need as many people there as possible to send the message to Washington, we mean business. So go to x-conference.com and sign up, please.
Oh, will you be having a press conference like at the
yes.
2005, I believe it was, conference?
Thanks for reminding me. Yeah, we will. On the Monday morning following the X conference, we'll have a press conference at the National Press Club at 10 a.m., public invited. We'll make various announcements and what have you. So, yeah, definitely.
I attended the 2005 conference. I was very, very impressed. It was well organized. You and your crew did an excellent job.
I think we're going to do better this time, even, believe it or not. We've got a professional AV team coming in, Ken Liljegren and Paranormal Matrix Production, which is a subsidiary of Spectrum Video. We're going to have some high quality, I think, AV, and the rest of the format will be similar. So it's an event that is intended to not just be a conference. It's intended to be a change agent. It's part of the advocacy work itself, and it's being held in the middle of the presidential campaign season, as well as the next 2008 conference in April, 18 through 20, will also be in the middle of the primary season. So we're doing what we can to get this issue into the presidential debates. I mean, it's just astounding to me that anybody would have the chutzpah and the hubris to say, I want to be president of the United States. the most powerful nation in the world, which has 10,000 nuclear warheads and is capable of destroying virtually all of civilization if it chose to, and has one of the most powerful economies in the world, and its foreign domestic policies affect the lives of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people. And I want to be the president of that country, but I don't want to be inconvenienced by talking about extraterrestrials. To me, it's astounding. It's an act of hubris, which is just at the highest level. It's got to stop. The American people are letting individuals run for president and for Congress, Senate, and so forth, and not talk about a number of issues, important, significant issues. They just let them skate free and dance into their office with BS and spin and mendacity, and then are shocked, shocked to learn later on that government doesn't work very well. American people have a lot of responsibility here. I mean, there's a lot of things going on wrong right now, and it's easy to point to government and say, well, they're screwing up, when they are. But the American people need to look in the mirror and decide how much responsibility they have for the dilemmas that we're facing, because I believe that responsibility is large. We are failing ourselves, and we need to wake up, and we better do it soon, because I think the consequences are going to be shocking. We think we got it made here, that we're untouchable and invincible, and we'll always have all this good stuff. And history has shown that that's not the case. That you don't pay attention to business. You don't do what's right, and you disappear, and there's nothing left but a bunch of rubble people to write about later on. America is not invincible, and it's not a guarantee, and it's not a sure thing. We could lose this republic, and I think we need to think about that real hard. It's hard to even get into this without getting angry. You've got countries like Australia, which has a mandatory voting law. In other words, you're required by law to at least to vote. You can go in the polls and put none of the above or write in somebody, but you're required to vote. They have 95% turnout in their elections. France doesn't even have a voting law, but they had an 84% turnout.
Why do you think it's so low here in the States?
Because American people have got indulgent, soft, distracted, confused.
Don't care.
Jaded. Lost their way. So recently, we've had turnouts as high as 60%. Given all the stuff going on, that's not too surprising. But you don't have to go back many years. The turnouts, the elections are running 25%, 30%, 35%, 40%. It's obscene, right? It's obscene. And I've heard all the excuses. Well, I don't vote. Don't matter. The parties are both the same. Not gonna make it. I'm too tired. Whatever. Do that. But don't complain. Don't even utter a syllable when everything starts falling apart around you. You don't have a right to.
I
don't
agree.
Vote. As far as I'm concerned, you don't have a right to complain about anything that happens in this country. Take a lesson from the Athenians, from the Romans, from the Carthaginians, from the Russian monarchists. Take a lesson from the Bolsheviks, the German people that supported the Nazis. Take a lesson from the Serbs. Take a lesson from all those people who neglected to take care of business and allowed their governments to decay into dysfunctional systems, because all of those systems are gone. Some of them are rubble. Take a hard lesson, because if we don't get our act together pretty soon, we're going to go the way of the same historical precedents.
And on that note, we need to go to a break, and we'll be right back on the Paranormal Radio Network with Stephen Bassett here on Eye to the Sky.
A child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for a new one. And as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cats in the cradle and the sewers, little boy to the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
Questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Perspective. We all have one. Our entire view of the world is based on it. Welcome to the Unabridged Universe. We invite you to set your perspective aside for a moment and join us on a refreshing journey into aspects of your universe that you may not have noticed from your particular point of view. Let host Jason Wilson be your guide into the corners of the universe you've never peeked into before. Who knows? You may just enjoy it and end up coming back for more. Take a stroll into the Unabridged Universe, live Saturdays from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time. Only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host Charles Giuliani, Monday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts. Ignorance kills.
Hi, this is James Arthur Janchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality. All about pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. But like a contradiction, we'll find the judge here. On Feet to the Fire. Sunday evenings. Live. Do you listen? Fire. www.feettofire.com for more information.
Are you ready to know? What angels, ETs, and nightmares walk beside you? Are you ready to know? That not only will you be a creation, you will be one as well? Are you ready? To know that you have been trapped in your own beliefs, in your own world, and never know who and what you truly are? Let's explore these concepts and theories, and we'll hear what they have to say. Join us Sunday nights, 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern. I'm Joshua James, your host of Sunday Nights on Paranormal Radio Network. See you Sunday.
welcome back to Eye to the Sky tonight. Our host, our guest, brother, is Stephen Bassett. Stephen, one thing we were talking about during the break was that we all, both of us, failed to mention the time for the ABC debate deal.
Yeah, it is. It's essentially this week with George Stephanopoulos is a very well-known Sunday morning political show. And essentially, it's that time slot. They're going to make it 90 minutes, though. So in some parts of the country, it's at 10 a.m. Some, it's 9 a.m. It might even be 11. You need to check your local listings. I think if you go to abcnews.com and you find the show this week, they have a link there to the to a list of the times for different cities. But you check your local listings. So it's going to be tomorrow morning, 90-minute. Probably without commercials, and it'll be a debate, ABC debate, and the question is whether these candidates would call for a congressional hearing or support a congressional hearing for the many witnesses that are ready to come forward, and whether they would demand a full briefing from the intelligence and military agencies on this issue as President of the United States, or whether they would accept the, well, you don't have a need to know, Mr. or Mrs. President, so we're not going to tell you. That kind of thing. That's what that question's about. It's in play. There's 45 questions that have been submitted. Video questions, about a half dozen, I think, will be used. Right now, the ICAUT website is down, so people can't go view it right now, but we had about 800 or so that have gone and viewed the question and rated it pretty high. So it's got a shot. It's also important to note that ABC has been sent a lot of information. Their producers have talked with us, various people in the field, for various times. And they ran the Peter Jennings documentary, 2 hours, UFO Seeing is Believing, which did have some very good sections. I mean, there were some serious flaws in that documentary due to, you know, lack of research or understanding. But there were some very important issues
raised. Right.
So ABC is maybe ahead of the curve compared to the CBS and NBC. In fact, it is ahead of the curve. So it's possible that they may run that question in context with that documentary, something along the lines of, well, you know, in July, whatever, last year, we ran a two-hour documentary on the UFO issue. And this question is in that context, and then they would ask it of the candidates, and then we'll see how the candidates handle it.
That would be interesting. If it does make it on there, get asked. Kind of like to see the expression on the candidate's faces when it's asked.
I know this. Any candidate that laughs it off is going to get a lot of nasty email. So.
Oh, from myself included.
Yeah. No, I think they'll be shocked. If they really blow this question off, they're going to be shocked, the email they're going to get. So, whatever. It's a good thing. It's only a positive if this question gets asked. I don't care what the candidate's response is. If it gets in play, it's important. So, and this question has also been submitted for the GOP debate, CNN, on September 17th. So it could get asked again. And guess what? The campaign still has 14 months to go. So 15, 16 months to go. So this may be the year that the candidates actually have to face this question and deal with it. And that would be a milestone. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
We have another question from Gossamer 777, who informed me that to warn you that he's going to ask the $64,000 question.
So does it come with a $64,000 check?
I don't know.
Okay.
Go ahead, Gossamer, the mic is yours. And as soon as Joe gives me the mic, okay, we got some technical difficulties in the virtual auditorium, so we'll get back to the $64,000 question. Oh my, wonders of technology, right?
Well, we're always overreaching when it comes to tech, but it's fun.
Oh yeah, I love my computer, and being able to hook up with people all over the world, which actually, you know, we're heard on Live 365 and I forget how many other different servers, Shotcast, and and so we're literally heard all over the world. We're heard in quite a few different countries. In our virtual auditorium here in Paltalk, we have a lot of people that come in from the UK, from Australia, New Zealand. So, yeah, we're truly an international audience here. We don't even have a mic. Oh, my screen's gone bad on me. That's why I'm not seeing it. Okay, Stephen, I've got a quick question for you. What makes you feel that we're really close to disclosure, governmental disclosure, and why?
Well, this is a very complex question. It's based on my assessment of the entire arena, everything that's going on. Last year, I think it was April, I set the paradigm clock, which is at the website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. I set it to 15 seconds to midnight. I mean, I put it really close because I felt that we're very close to disclosure based upon a whole range of things. One of them is the amount of pressure that's starting to emerge from other countries, France, England, Canada, Mexico, Brazil. These countries are demonstrating that they're losing patience with the U.S.'s intransigence here. They have deferred to us. They've sort of taken a position that the U.S. will be the country that will announce the ET presence, and they'll wait for us to do it. But their willingness to cooperate with us, in fact, the willingness of everybody to cooperate with us has significantly diminished in the last 10 years. So they're losing patience in general, but on this issue in particular, they're losing patience. So there's been a number of things they've been doing, and I'm following all that. More witnesses continue to emerge, come forward, that know about this issue or intersected it while they were working for the government or the military or the intelligence community. And they're continuing to come forward, which is making it harder for the government to ignore it. The people's public awareness is growing. Documentaries, books continue to come out. There's a huge breach between the military and the intelligence community and the executive branch right now, which kind of opens up some cracks and fissures, which could lead to a breakdown of the embargo. That's going on right now, unprecedented, really. So all of this, you put it all together, and what you've got is you've got an extraordinary situation where the world's leading government continues to say that the emperor is wearing clothes, when in fact the emperor is stark naked. And is doing so even as more and more people are figuring it out. More articles, more photos, more videotape. And of course it's really an extraordinary situation. It's almost Lewis Carolian, right? Meaning Alice in Wonderland. It's really amazing, and it's embarrassing. It's awkward. It's silly. But the government continues to do this, and it's just not going to hold up much longer. It's just silly. It's ridiculous. And at some point, this is going to give. So that's the way to look at the truth embargo. It's run its course. It's no longer functional. And it's become an embarrassment as opposed to a serious and appropriate national defense position, right? And now it's just a joke. So that's why the only way you end that situation, the only way you get out of this is you tell the truth. Hold a press conference and say, yeah, there's extraterrestrials here. Now you move to a whole new situation. That doesn't mean the government will suddenly be operating properly or doing its job, that the Congress will suddenly wake up and start acting like elected officials instead of clowns, but nevertheless, it will change things and we'll move, I think, to a new situation. So that's a short answer to a very, very difficult question. But I mean, I could go on for hours about what's going on worldwide in the United States. But whatever that is, oh, that's somebody calling me. And I can't take that call. Hang on a second. That is a Skype call. Now, talk about technology. I just recently set up on Skype, and I'm just getting going on that, and I'm going to be sending out an email soon where I'm going to give the people in my list my Skype calling name. And as you know, with Skype, you can call people on the computer and video call them, right? No charge, free. So that was my very first Skype call coming in, and I just turned the sound off, and that'll get set back, and I'll deal with it later. But that's another reason why this truth embargo is going to end. I mean, the internet is changing everything, and it's incredibly powerful. And the old paradigm, old world power people, the elite, the ones that amassed all their money, right, selling oil and gold and insider stock or whatever else. I mean, they accumulated all this massive wealth, and they sit on the big boards and in the high-end groups, and they meet in the Bilderbergers, and they hang out at Bohemian Grove, and they plan the future of the world, whatever. These people are from another generation, mostly in their 60s and 70s, and they're just not computer savvy. I mean, very few of them could even hold their water against your typical 12-year-old right now. And the internet is simply run ahead of them. It's simply something they can't deal with yet. And as a result, it's putting enormous pressure on all of their fun and games. You know, like Alex Jones sneaks a camera into the Bohemian Grove, takes a video of it, puts it up on the net. Now it's all over the place, and he's going on Coast to Coast and other shows and exposing Bohemian Grove, which is just ridiculous. The whole thing is a joke. The internet has got 500,000 blogs. George Allen makes a pretty stupid remark at a campaign get-together, uses the word macaca. Somebody films that on a cell phone, transfers it to their web, puts it up on the YouTube, and within a couple of weeks, his political career is over. So the pressure that the internet and video revolution and instant communications worldwide is putting on the ability of these entrenched power centers to just jerk us around and do as they please is enormous. And they're really starting to wilt under the pressure. Now, the only way they can solve this problem would be to bring the internet under control, to censor it, control it, bring it down. That is the only solution for them. If they don't, they're finished. I mean, you're going to have a new whole structure here soon. So obviously, we need to be extremely vigilant, about any efforts to censor, control the net in any significant way that we don't agree with. If it's a good policy and the vast majority of people agree with it, okay. But anything else, forget it. But you would expect them to make the effort to do this. So, I mean, look for the big shots and the power elite to try to somehow rein the internet in to get it off their backs. And our job is to make sure that they fail in that effort. So it's in answer to your question. One of the reasons the truth embargo is going to end is that in the era of global communications and satellites, cell phones, cell phone cameras, YouTubes, MySpaces, blogs, millions of websites and instant communication, to actually attempt to maintain that truth embargo and pretend that there's no ETs here when they're all over the place is just beyond the pale. It's just beyond the pale, and yet they continue to tempt it. Bless their pointy little heads, right? And they continue to get up there and make stupid things about crash test dummies and giggle and laugh and make complete asses of themselves. And it's amazing, but that's what they do. And the American people can put an end to it tomorrow by putting a little bit of money behind the political resolution of this, the political efforts, and we'd have the truth forthwith, or simply put enough pressure on their congressional members and the media
Stephen, this is David Andrew again. Okay. Maybe there's... a little interest on it now. Now it's 65. $5,000 question. But
I wasn't able to
You got the money. And the resources to have a paradise here. To empower. I lost some national attention. Get overall. I'm just saying that that's closet on the issue since then. So Hillary, knows that they're